Welcome back, everybody. This is your hostess with the mostest, Lady J.
And I'm Eric Anthony, and you are listening to...
The Cave of Solitude, folks. Welcome back.
Coming to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto, Lady J, what's going on?
Life. Life has happened. Life has come full circle after the BVS.
Is life good?
Life is sad.
Life is bad.
Life is traumatic.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you coping? This too shall pass.
Yeah. I think we've, there's a lot of good, and there's a lot of bad, and...
In the world, or in the world of comic books?
In the world of BVS. It's just a very conflicting time post Batman v Superman, so...
Yeah, speaking on that, I know we did a whole episode, our last episode was the review, but I've become somewhat of a villain, apparently, on the Instagram post where people put up posts saying, what did you think of the movie? Give us your thoughts. Yada, yada, yada. And then you got all these people posting, it was the greatest movie ever, 10 out of 10. And I'll put, like, no, the movie was horrible. And then I get, like, all this anger, this vitriolic anger of people calling me out and all this stuff. And it's just like, wow, have I become, like, what people consider a troll?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that... I mean, we live in a time where conversation is welcomed, mm-hmm. and there's avenues where there's different outlets for us to express our views. And I don't think just because we don't agree with everything, it's still a fun movie. It's not that...
Yeah, you're entertained.
It had parts that were visually, it was great, and some action sequences and fight sequences were so cool. They were amazing. But, you know, it wasn't a 10 out of 10. That's just my personal opinion. And it's okay for people to have differing thoughts. And that's the reason why we do what we do. So we can talk about it and see what other people think.
I agree with you. And it's all about a little bit of feedback and conversation. And sometimes you agree to disagree. And that's okay. Like, my whole thing is, if people feel a certain way, I just want to know why. Just explain to me. Help me appreciate what you like. That's my only thing.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Well, okay. So then... On this topic, is there anything that someone has explained to you that kind of, not changed your mind completely, but have you learned anything from other people's opinions that kind of maybe clarified or maybe smoothed over your initial thoughts on certain things in the movie?
I've read some well-written responses and posts directed at me, some... worded strongly, but to answer your question, no. Nothing has changed. No one has really changed my perspective on, because the things that they try to explain or look over, none of it makes sense. The biggest thing, of course, is the whole Martha, right? And there was this one specific post where they said, you know what, on our podcast, we explain the whole Martha thing. And I'm like, the very fact we've got to try to explain it and justify it just kind of proves where it's lacking. And then people were like, well, the Martha, this was the explanation was, the Martha is that it puts Bruce back to, it brings him back to where he needs to be because he's so far off of the person he was supposed to. And when he hears that name, it's not just the fact that it's Superman's mother's name. It's the significance of the fact that that's the last words his father said and he's reminded of his mission. It brings him back and it makes him realize what he's become. And it allows him to fulfill that childhood vow of Martha will not die tonight. And it goes into all the psychoanalysis of Bruce Wayne and what the significance of that means. And so my point was, well, one, Batman visits his mother's grave and his father's grave every day, and he would never lose sight of his vision. Even in The Dark Knight Returns, what brings him back to being Batman is that he's obsessed with this mission. But he never, his whole point is he can't handle seeing anybody victimized. Right, not that he's got to go back out and now kill people because he's just so angry with life that he just wants to kill.
Right.
Which is the Batman.
And brand people to be murdered in prison.
To be executed. So I'm like, that doesn't make sense. And as well, Superman, if this was a well-written, realistic version, I think Superman would say, you have to save my mother. And Batman, that we know, would be like, what do you mean you have to save your mother? Right. That's like what would matter to him. You're
going
to
be victimized like I was? Yeah. I think it would reach the humane side of him if that would have been taken from that angle.
Exactly.
And one of our followers actually made a comment on our post that no one really would ever refer to their parent by their first name.
Exactly. Like, it just doesn't make sense. Never done it. I've never done it.
Although my sibling has.
Okay. That's
but,
fine.
But more like from a comical thing. Not when this is a pressing matter. Things need to happen yesterday.
Like
let's not try to, you know, psychoanalyze this in this time of need when things need to move.
Right.
So I guess I can appreciate that person's trying to explain, but I feel like now some may be grasping for straws here.
Yeah.
So exactly. I appreciate it. I'll listen to it. I hear it. Like I said, I think I like hearing people's opinions, but it's kind of weak to me. And like you said, if it needs a explanation and it needs to hold weight behind it, it doesn't really.
Yeah, like what if Bob Kane and Siegel and Shuster back in the 1938-39 happened to name them Martha and Batman's mother was Joan? Then what would they have done in the movie? What would they have, you know what I mean? Like that's the point I'm trying to make, is that using that as your trope to hook it back is just like, I don't know, it's weak writing to me. And it's not what you would, it's not the reason what would make Batman change his mind about anything. He's so focused about his mission. But anyhow, let's get on to some news. I have some news for you here that I looked up. And it's kind of sticking on the theme of Batman v Superman. But last weekend, they had the opening weekend of Batman v Superman was huge blockbuster weekend. And they had an $81 million Friday, which was really big. And overall, they're already almost, not yet, at $600 million.
Hmm.
However, they have also broken another record of the biggest drop in ticket sales for a movie. And this is only its second week. It's dropped to 71% of what it did last Friday. So last Friday was 81 million. This Friday, 15 million.
No way.
And I said this on some other posts in my, when people have praised it for how wonderful it is and how true it is to the comic book medium, how it's faithful. I said, well, it's about as faithful to a comic book story or characters as Wolverine Origins is. The things it pulls from the comics are there in both movies, if mm-hmm. you want to compare it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also now in the same company as Wolverine Origins as the biggest drop in box office ticket sales after its first week.
Bum, 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 bum.
So everybody who thinks this is the greatest thing ever,
good on you.
And who everyone was excited as saying, critics are wrong, look how much we sold. What happened? So hate to say I told you so, but
well, that's the latest update.
And the reason that they said it's shocking is because there is no competition this week for it to not be having people go see it.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't something that's come out that is like gonna blow it out of the water. So it shouldn't drop off the way it's dropped off. And it's spring break in the States for a lot of people. So more people should be going to see it.
They're all in Cancun.
I guess, but not everyone goes to Cancun, right? I think there's still theaters in Cancun, but I guess if you're in Cancun, you're not going to want to watch Batman v Superman. I would, but that's just me. Another thing as well, in regards to the DC Universe, they're saying that Cyborg, Ray Fisher, is going to be in the Flash movie that's going to be coming out in this new DCU. Debra Snyder has been saying that it's going to be a really good take because you're going to have a lot of chemistry together. They're both, Ezra Miller is going to be really funny, and it's going to be a different feel from the Batman v Superman movie, and people are going to be really happy with it. Personally, I'm a fan of the DC television division, and everybody is up in arms about the fact that it's not Grant Gustin who's going to be in the DC movies. And I really think Flash is going to bomb tremendously for the simple fact that it's not going to be the Flash that everybody already loves mm-hmm. on television.
Right.
You got this look on your face because you want to ask me a question that you said, you know, I want to bring something up about these DC television series that you like so much. Do you want to ask me that question now or save it for another time?
I would just like to know.
Yes.
Why do you like these shows so much?
Why? How could you not like these shows? Okay, what is your gripe against these shows?
There is a huge cheese factor with these DC televised mm-hmm. characters. Mm-hmm. And I'm with the overacting and mm-hmm. some of the... I feel like the stories are just repetitive. And I gotta say, like, I don't go looking for the remote the way you do.
No.
But when I'm walking by and laughing at you, I have to admit, I'll stop. And I'll be like kind of, you know, I get kind of stuck.
Right.
I get stuck on stupid. Just a little bit. But I know that you really enjoy it and it's your thing, but it's the one thing I think that we don't really see eye to eye on. And I'm just trying to figure out what is it that pulls you into the shows. Like, what do you like about them?
Well, I admit that there is a definite cheese factor. And I think they're aware of that. They're aware of the certain cheesiness that is supposed to be there in this particular production of these DC adaptations. Because what they're doing is saying... We know we're adapting comic books. We want this to feel like straight from every show is going to be like an issue of a comic book. And The Flash has a cheese factor to it. There's humor, but there's a lot of emotion and there's a lot of good character development in it. And as intense as some of the acting may seem sometimes, seeing even like Terry Cavanaugh go from his different versions of Harrison Wells is some really...
This is true.
It's some really good acting in there. Mm-hmm. And it's consistent. That's the thing, right? It's not just cheesy for being cheesy. The guy who plays Captain Cold. That's the guy who drives you the guy from Prison Break. He drives you crazy the most. But he has a take on it that he does all the time. So it's like a very consistent character that he performs as when he's the Captain Cold. So it's cheesy, but you know, like, he's very much doing this particular enunciation and everything on purpose.
Right.
So when you take it for what it's worth in that regard, you don't watch it with like, well, that's just some overacting. I think they're overacting on purpose because some of these people they're very good actors.
And if I'm to be honest, it seems like the overacting typically comes from the villains, right, which are only there for the one episode.
Right.
But the thing is, though, my issue with that then, and this is me playing devil's advocate a bit, is that these villains, they're known villains. So, like, in the Supergirl episode that you watched, and I was adamant about not watching, but then...
Right.
Oh my goodness, I'm drawing a blank. She-Ra?
Banshee.
Banshee was in it. And, you know, she had this, you know, she's screaming at everybody. But the makeup and the hair, that was great. The physicality of it, I thought was great. But her, like, her delivery of the lines, it was just so like, oh, I can't take you seriously. Like,
and that's the thing, right? You can't. You watch this thing as an escape.
But this thing is about life and death. And it's like, and spoilers, if you haven't seen the episode, sorry, but when then Superman and Supergirl and Flash apparently talk about like trying to outrace each other and seeing who's quick, like, again, that is something from the comic books where, you know, they kind of have this friendly competitive spirit with their colleagues,
mm-hmm.
but it was presented so like laughable, and I can't. And then and the scripts in the comic books, like, if you're saying that they're doing like a series or a taking the material from an actual comic book, like, if it was done so well on paper, sometimes it's just a shame to me to see it on screen and be like,
this is silly.
Laughing at it.
Yeah. And you got to take it, like, the scenes in The Flash and in Supergirl that are the emotionally evocative moments, they capture it really well, where you have those things with Cat Grant and her son, or Supergirl and her relationships with her sister.
She has a son?
Yeah, she's got two sons. Her relationships with her sister.
She seems so detached. I didn't think she'd have a relationship with anything.
And that's the point, right? Is that these characters come off so... there's no layers to them, but when you start peeling back the layers amongst all the cheesiness, and you see, like, there's real heart to it. That you laugh at it and be like, oh, that's so silly. But they're, at the end of the day, they realize they're in a comic book world. Whereas you watch something like Man of Steel and BVS, and you're just like, oh, this is such a scary, ugly, horrible place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not... They're like, oh, look, you're a superhero too. Like, this is awesome. And they realize this is an awesome thing to have a superhero team up. Like, how exciting is this? And you get that feeling when you watch it. Like, this is exciting. The guys making this realize this is exciting. And they want us to have fun. So that DC universe is about fun. And The Flash is a funny character. He is a character that isn't as serious as Batman.
Right.
Whereas the DCU, in a lot of ways, even the comic book line, they've forgotten, like, each character has their own arc. Flash is fun. He could be funny. Batman is dark and edgy and brooding. But Wonder Woman is about, like, the fantasy and the adventure and, you know, Greek mythology. You have to add all of those things. It can't all just be grim and, what does this all mean? What's the subtext of gods amongst men? And, like, no. This is, yeah, that's there, but...
It's an escape.
It's an escape. And that's what the shows are. It's like, wow, they're actually traveling back in time and revisiting... You know, they revisited an episode from last season from another perspective.
Right.
That's cool. But okay. If you take it too serious and be like, well, this isn't going to win an Emmy. You know, then it's just not, you can criticize it all day and night, but it is a lot of fun. And I've actually come closer to tears watching The Flash and seeing him.
Because of him and his mama?
Him and his mom, him and his dad, him and Joe West, like the relationships he has with people that are his family and what it means to him, it's really built up where it's like, yeah, I can relate to that more than I related to Superman dying, spoilers,
mm-hmm.
in BVS. They build it up properly to mean something. So that's why I like it. But I do agree with you. There is a nice slice of cheese, but cheese is good with everything. As you would agree, right?
This is true on so many levels. Hey, who's Shikra?
Shikra.
Why did I say that? I can't even picture who this is.
Let me get back to you on that because it does sound familiar.
Right?
Yeah, it does. It sounds really familiar.
Hmm.
Shikra, I think, was a character from an 80s cartoon, but it's not coming to me right now.
Not
I'm drawing a blank.
Not the,
I don't know if it's Thundercats.
Yeah. Is it?
Sounds like it. We'll get back to you. We'll get back on that because we're throwing something out there we should know.
No, I know. Anyway, next.
We've got the internet here. You want to look up Shikra or you want to leave it for later?
Let's leave it hanging.
Okay. We'll get someone to write in and tell us why we're wrong.
Hey, guess what?
Tell me.
I read a book.
Really?
I read another book.
Another book.
And I actually finished it.
How long did it take?
Anyway, so it's called Trinidad.
Say that again? Do we need subtitles for the show?
In English, it's translated Trinity.
Oh, so this is a religious episode.
Would you like to tell us what this is all about?
Okay, so this episode, we're going to, as we've been promising you in past episodes, we have another Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman related episode. Yes, I know we're going heavy on it, but too bad, it's our show. This is Matt Wagner's Trinity, featuring the DC's World's Finest Team, which is often referred to as the Trinity because they operate three as one. There's no religious context here. Don't worry, we're not going to be getting into that or the subtext of gods amongst men and all that jazz. We're just going to have a conversation about a nice, fun story about DC's most popular superheroes.
That's just champagne.
Taff J is celebrating today. Taff J made me lose my train of thought. We're going to be talking about DC's Trinity, like I said, from Matt Wagner. And let me give you the quick plot synopsis that I am going to read off of Wikipedia, because they can probably put it better than I can. So this story establishes the first meeting between the world's finest Trinity, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. When Batman's greatest nemesis, Ra's al Ghul, recruits Bizarro and the Amazon warrior Artemis to aid him in his plan to create global chaos, the Dark Knight detective suddenly finds himself working with the Man of Steel and the Amazon princess, looking to thwart the madman's plot to simultaneously destroy all satellite communications as well as all of the world's oil reserves. Earth's greatest heroes reluctantly band together. But if Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman are to have any hope of stopping Ra's nuclear missile assault, they will first need to overcome their own biases and reconcile their differing philosophies. So, that is the overview and subplot of Trinity from Matt Wagner. Now, I just want to say, before we start, we've never discussed the... I may have discussed the art of Matt Wagner before, I'm not sure. But I know Little Sparrow, our friend Little Sparrow of the show, is a fan of Matt Wagner's art. Because when she was reading on her own the Red Hood storyline, mm-hmm. the covers, some of the covers from that series that she really appreciated and actually wrote a post on, are drawn from Matt Wagner. So if Little Sparrow is listening, you would probably really appreciate this book because of the way that it's drawn in the style that you had claimed to have really appreciated and enjoyed. So if you're looking for a art style to read a whole comic book that you can appreciate more and enjoy the story, this might be the one. That's a shout out to Little Sparrow.
Little Sparrow.
Daff J, do you want to...
Is that what a sparrow sounds like? I don't know.
Oh, boy. Talk to me about Trinity, Daff J.
I liked it. I kind of liked how, and I know we're going to get into it in a little bit more detail, but I really liked how they kind of introduced not just their, blossoming friendship, but the conflicts that they had amongst each other. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you 100%. This story is more based on more than the like the conflict with the villain. I think the biggest praise that this story gets is that it focuses more on the characterization of the three main titular characters as opposed to the problem at hand. It's developing their relationship, why they work together, what their differences are. And at the time when it was written, I think it was 2003, the monthly titles were kind of, they said, were a little bit shallow when it came to the characterization of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. So this was a nice departure from just a monthly storyline, villain, whatever the case may be. And it really focused on their relationships.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things I really like that starts the opening of this book, or throughout the book, but you see it right from the start, is with these characters, there's so much stories that have been written that it's kind of hard to show something new and interesting about them, like to add something new, and you can't reinvent the wheel really. But what I liked in the beginning of this book is Clark Kent on his way to work, and how it shows him kind of running late on purpose in order to keep up appearances. We know he could be everywhere on time if he wanted to be, right? But he misses the train kind of on purpose and is running through a crowd.
So he can appear like the average man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he says there too, it's, I try to miss one at least 3 times a week. It's good for the image.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people often say, like, how can no one see that he's Superman? It's just the glasses. It's the dumbest disguise. And it is. We know that. But it's the way that he plays Clark Kent and recognizes how his persona as Clark Kent, which is really who he is, but in the Daily Planet and to those where he's operating now, he's got to give off a little bit of that imperfection, a little bit of that human being fallible of like, yeah, I missed the train.
Yeah.
Superman would never miss the train. You just fly in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's those little touches that add to the secret identity, I think, like that whole concept.
Yeah.
How about yourself? What are some of your highlights throughout the book that you enjoyed about seeing these characters? This is their first time meeting before Justice League is formed, so I don't know what timeline it fits in, but I really enjoyed seeing them
meet the first time. I like seeing Superman in his PJs.
Really? Well, yeah. I missed that. Where was that?
So, it's when he's in the Fortress of Solitude.
Okay.
In his fortress, and he's kind of talking about his people and the history, and he likes to think that the women had cloaks as well.
Yeah,
he's
kind of
wearing this different attire, and I'm thinking, is he just, like, gonna open a bottle of bubbly and just, like, snuggle up against the, you know what I mean? So I'm just, and it was a different attire altogether. Okay. And I've never seen it before. And this is his, like, lay low clothes. And, which was interesting to me because I'm thinking, well, his true identity is Kal-El. This is who he is. Clark Kent is his alter ego. Although he was raised as a human being with the same morals of the morals of a human. This is who he is. So maybe when he winds down, this is his getup. Mm. So I'm like, hey, Kryptonite PJs, way to go.
I actually, if I could be wrong, it could be his Kryptonite PJs, but I think that what you're referencing to, I remember the scene now. He has like a robe on top and for like it's his cape in the front and the back. But
looks like a bib. A long bib.
So what that is a traditional Kryptonian garb.
Oh, okay.
So he's kind of embracing, like you said, his Kryptonian history because he's in the Fortress of Solitude that is his closest connection to home.
Yes, exactly.
So yeah, that's him really just like he's dressed like his parents there, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of absorbing, you know, the whole Kryptonian culture.
Right.
So when he's at the Fortress of Solitude, where he doesn't live there, some people think he lives there, but that's where he goes for lonely time, like solitude, right? And he embraces his ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
But you made an interesting point. I think the interesting thing about Superman, because you said Clark Kent is his alter ego, who he pretends to be, and Kal-El is actually who he is. And I think Superman is a really interesting character in that he's got kind of almost like Bruce Wayne in a way. You've got Bruce Wayne that's with Alfred, who is he's Batman. He's the real Bruce Wayne. He's a total different entity. Then you've got him as Bruce Wayne, the playboy and the kind of, you know, aloof, silly guy who's no one can really take seriously or can. He's that playboy that no one knows what he's all about, and he plays that up really well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Batman, who's just Bruce Wayne intensified with the gadgets and the
mask.
Costume, the mask,
the
right?
Fear.
Yeah, that's his. But then Superman is, to me, the best type of Superman stories are when you focus on Clark, when you know that he is Clark Kent, because for all intents and purposes, he's been raised to be more human than most people.
Yeah.
He's had a really good, solid upbringing from people with good morals and have taught him to... They're the reason he's a Superman. They're the reason he's a hero because of Jonathan and Martha Kent. And I think later in his life, depending on the version of Superman that you're reading, later on in his life, he becomes more... aware of his Kryptonian ancestry, and as an adult he tries to embrace it to become familiar. It's like, you know, a typical adopted kid where he knows who his real parent, like his parents are the ones who raised him, but then when they get to a certain point, like, I want to know where I actually come from.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm, you know, of a mixed complexion and my parents are both like white, so I want to know a little bit about where I'm from to understand myself a little bit better, naturally, right? So when he's in the Fortress of Solitude, that's what I see him kind of doing. But I always like to see him as Clark.
Right.
Even though, as an adult, his Clark Kent persona is a little bit more, you know, clumsy and like we saw there being late
and
stuff.
And kind of, I guess, talking a little bit on what you're speaking of, I kind of like how he's not biased to one or the other.
No.
He loves the fact that he was raised with... morals and love and whatever with people. Mm-hmm. And but then he also is he's speaking highly of his, I guess his culture, his people.
Yeah.
And he looks so regal.
Right.
He looks like he's honoring
right.
where he's coming exactly. from. And it's not like just because he's alien, pun intended,
right.
that, you know, he's ashamed of it. Even though it's done in privacy,
right.
he still embraces that part of him. It's not shafted or put to the side.
Yes.
But he embraces it just like he does his human side. And I think this was a very beautiful depiction
right.
of his history and how dear he holds it to his heart.
Right. And I think these are important elements when you're trying to develop the character and get a sense of them, because he doesn't ever view himself as being superior to the human race.
Yeah.
Because that's right. because the Kryptonian background, their technology, they're light years ahead of us when you look at it that way of their technology and their intelligence. But he's never used that to abuse his citizenship, as it were, on the planet Earth. He's always like, I'm one of them. This is where I'm from, and I'm going to take the good things from here and allow that to influence me on how I help people
mm-hmm.
and what I add to this. But I'm never going to try to recreate Krypton on Earth, because he has such love for the planet he was right. raised on.
Yeah.
And I think not backtracking, but those are the type of elements I feel are missing in the
BVS.
Yeah, in that whole cinematic universe where mm-hmm. they're like, you know, people would be scared of him and all this jazz, and he's this alien and godlike creature. It's like, that could be explored, but there's a lot more to him that is relatable and that can be, it can make you feel good about yourself, as opposed to watching it and being like, oh, he's just a problem. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Continue. Tell me other things you enjoyed.
Well, one of the things that I really enjoyed, which I thought it was something that kind of was throughout the book, was the fact that Batman and Superman particularly, although they weren't always in agreement and didn't see things eye to eye, they would always come to each other's defense.
Yes.
And it wasn't always said out loud to each other,
mm-hmm.
but it was explained to either the audience, the reader,
mm-hmm.
or in this case, Wonder Woman, who she was the third wheel. She kind of came in and was seeking out Superman, and then she also came to know Batman.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't always agree with certain methods that were done, and I think we're going to get into that a little bit more.
Yeah.
But there, you can tell by the way Superman would express certain feelings towards Batman and how he valued his friendship and his courage. And again, kind of, I hate to bring it up, but again, BVS, like, that kind of lacked that character or relationship development.
No, yeah.
Which was here in this book, and which is why it makes it so, I guess, special. I like the fact that there was something there that, again, even though, and that happens in real life. You love your friends and you appreciate who they are. You may not always agree on certain things, but when someone touches them, you come to their defense a little bit, kind of ready to fight for them.
Right.
Because you know that their true self.
Right. And you respect it.
And yeah, exactly. And I really liked how this book kind of brought out and enhanced their friendship and their loyalty to each other.
Yeah. There was a really cool scene here early on of them, Clark and Bruce, being in the car together.
Yeah.
And talking to one another, knowing who they actually are,
mm-hmm.
but they are, you know, trying to figure out what the plot is that is kind of connecting both of their cities to each other. And, you know, that I think that's what frustrates me so much when you brought it up. I'm going to bring it up. We'll probably do it throughout because it's so closely connected. It's the characters. That's what frustrates me so much when I watch something like BVS, because this is, it could have very easily been addressed in this way where you introduce these characters to each other to find a way that connects their cities in a much more logical way that would require them to figure each other's motives out, to have a little bit more respect for how one operates. And you see it done here in such a well-paced way, in such a way that it's like, yeah, that's a perfect way to connect them to each other, and not have to overly frighten the audience or make them feel like there's some huge, like, in this story there is a big plot happening, but you see them working together towards that.
And not just working together, but in this same scenario where we're talking about where they're in the car, Bruce brings to Clark's attention that this particular group, they were after kryptonite.
Right.
So not only is he informing, like, or telling him what he's come across, but he's telling his friend, you gotta watch out, because there's something happening and you're in danger.
How beautiful would that have been, that scene that you're describing? When you look at this picture, Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill sitting like that talking to one another. What a difference it would have made in your emotional connection to it, to see Bruce like that, to be like, listen, this is what they're after. I know this is what hurts you. Keep your head up.
Yeah, yeah. You know? But again, it's done, but I'm glad that it's explored in this storyline.
Yeah.
And it kind of brings a little bit of emotion into this story.
Yeah. The third character that is introduced here being Wonder Woman, who Bruce and Clark know of each other and know who each other are, right? And at this point in the timeline, they've never met Wonder Woman or have heard of where she's from. So it's one of those perfect moments of she with you kind of thing.
Right.
And I really like how they introduce bringing her into the story. In this particular storyline, we mentioned before, it's Ra's al Ghul is Batman's villain. Bizarro is the duplicate of Superman.
Gone wrong.
Yeah, the imperfect duplicate of Superman. And then there is a young Amazon named Artemis that teams up with them as well. So Ra's al Ghul is the one whose team, called the Purge, his clan, have taken this piece of kryptonite. They've also found this file from LexCorp, because in this version, Lex Luthor is the one who builds Bizarro.
Creates
Bizarro, yeah. And when it had gone wrong, they threw him into Antarctic and froze him. Because I think, if I'm not mistaken, that is one of his weaknesses. I'm not sure. Can't be 100%. I know he's got reverse of what Superman does. So if Superman has heat vision, Bizarro would have
cold
vision. So
did you know, just like Superman has, and I'm sure you know, but I didn't realize this until I read this book. We know that Superman gets his power from the sun.
Yeah.
Bizarro gets his power from the moonlight.
Yeah.
I had no idea until I thought it was just the rage and when he's fighting and the energy is what empowers him.
Yeah.
But it's there is a part in the book where he's chained up and contained, but he's under
moonlight. Yeah.
And that's what gives him energy. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's done really well.
FYI, folks. FYI.
Very nice, Def J. I appreciate that little tidbit of information. So,
did you like Artemis' depiction in the story? She was kind of portrayed like a punk rocker type of chick.
I did.
Yeah?
I liked it. I mean, it was a good way to introduce her as being some sort of a rebel or rogue Amazon who was representing herself. She called herself Diana, right?
Yeah.
So it was an interesting way for her to, like, what were her motives? Well, she was this rebellious Amazon who was trying to make a point. And I think later on in the story kind of learns the lesson or the error of her ways. But Bizarro was used in a very clever way to introduce us to
more champagne.
Oh, boy. Save some for the rest of us, Daph J. As I was saying, Bizarro was used in a way to introduce Paradise Island, because he, as we mentioned in the plot, he is taking all of these submarines that contain these nuclear missiles and harboring all of them for Ra's al Ghul. And one of them that is armed, that I think the submarine attempts to shoot at Bizarro, is he throws it and it ends up hitting Paradise Island.
Yes.
Which draws the attention of their ambassador, Diana Prince, to come and look for this man
the culprit
who was dressed in a red cloak and could fly and was extremely powerful, and links her back to Metropolis. And when she and Superman interact for the first time, that panel, that double page spread, is absolutely gorgeous. And she just... His dialogue here that Matt Wagner writes for him, he says something to the effect of, "I'll always remember the first sight of her. Lois, you're the most compelling woman I've ever met. But this is the most magnificent." And you see Diana, Wonder Woman, and she's not dressed scantily, like with the bikini brief version. She has these long, what are those called? For when a woman wears, it's like a one-piece bathing suit, but it looks more like shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got this...
kind of like what they wore in the 50s, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
Kind of like that. And she's got this... What Wonder Woman's costume represents is kind of like Superman. It's like the American flag to show that she's come in peace. And she's got like this cape that looks like the American flag.
That's
as an
true,
ambassador,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So she's there in her classic garb, seeing Superman for the first time. And she's like, "Come to you in peace. I greet you in peace. My name is Diana, emissary and ambassador for the Amazon people." And she's impressed from him equally. And they've automatically got this admiration for each other because of the power that they represent.
You know, it's funny. I think Wonder Woman, I find that in this story, she's intrigued or interested in knowing the man with absolute power.
Mm-hmm.
And she describes him as swifter than Hermes, stronger than Hercules, braver than Achilles. So she's attracted to his, she's attracted to him, not sexually or anything, but there is something about him that brings to her attention.
Yeah.
And she seeks him out. I thought that was... And I think that's clever writing, too, because she is an Amazonian, and her belief system would be in these, you know, gods of the past. And the way they chose to describe Superman is in this godly...
From her perspective. Right. Yeah.
But it's so interesting that Superman doesn't think of himself that way.
No. And that's the
point. And he doesn't abuse his power either. Yeah.
And that's the point I think is important to explore, that he does have those qualities, but he doesn't ever look at himself that way. But yeah, that's a great way of explaining Wonder Woman's admiration.
If we can kind of backtrack a little bit on Bizarro.
Okay.
And Ra's al Ghul. I felt for myself personally in this story, I felt happy for Bizarro that he had a friend.
I know.
Poor guy. Like, it was obviously, I know that Ra's al Ghul, you know, obviously, like, got this monster and abused of this. This month to kind of like work on his on for his advantages, but he kind of played on Bizarro's emotions, and Bizarro felt that he had finally had a friend.
Yeah, and he had that little chain, Bizarro number
one. And for this first time, I didn't see Bizarro as a bad guy. Did you?
No, I totally get what you're saying, and
but as a misunderstood, like. Creature or character, all he wanted was someone to just
be
like
nice to him.
Yeah, and be nice to him. I actually kind of felt a little
choked up for him.
A little bit. Yeah. I felt terrible, and certain events in the book like really upset me when it came to Bizarro. But yeah, that was one of the things that I didn't see him as a villain.
And that would have been, I think, a great way, like I said before, to show the, like, this is Superman gone wrong, but when you learn how to speak to him, because even in the comics, Superman's like, oh no, Bizarro, like, someone's upset him, and he has to try to figure out how to talk to Bizarro. It's really cool. There's All-Star Superman, I'm just going on a tangent a little bit, where Superman goes on Bizarro's planet for an issue and interacts with everybody there, and he figures out how to talk in Bizarro's lingo, because everything is backwards.
Yeah.
So once he knows how to talk to him, he sometimes is able to get through to him to make him be a little bit more reasonable. But he is a misunderstood character, and that's the key, is to have villains who you look at them, like a General Zod, for instance, and you're like, you know what? To a certain extent, they might be right. You know, Ra's al Ghul.
His mission was noble.
He's trying to purify the Earth, right?
He's like an environmental terrorist, if you will. Mm-hmm. But he's just kind of going about it the wrong way. And I almost feel like, well, if this was like the real world, because I'm so like, not that I'm like one of those activists, like, you know, picketing or anything. But God forbid if I see something on Instagram, because I follow a lot of animal and nature type of posts and pages and stuff. And, you know, if I ever come across anything where they're talking about animal abuse or, a poor, like today, remember, you're like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. Because I had scrolled and I found that there was this kitten, a cat with a broken leg, and no one was helping it, but someone was videotaping it. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, well, you're seeing it, but no one's doing anything about it to fix it.
Yeah.
And then, like, later on, I found out that they actually helped the cat. So I was like, okay. And I wrote, like, this long blurb on, like, you know, if there was more people like that, the world would be a little bit happier, maybe. But anyway, that's a whole different thing.
So we need more Ra's al Ghuls?
I think so, but to a certain extent. To a certain extent.
He's an eco-terrorist.
Yeah, I know he's insane, but like I said, his mission is noble.
But that's what makes the best villains, right? Is for you to look at them and be like,
the ones that think that they're actually trying to help.
The ones that think they're the hero.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So like a Luther, when you look at him, you really think like, well, he is actually trying to
make a difference.
Show the human race that we are good enough. Mm-hmm. But deep down inside, he's a narcissist, right? He looks down on everybody else and he just wants power. So they've got their twist of, I'm going to make the world better, but you're all going to have to be under my foot.
Yeah.
So that's the problem, why these...
It's a bit twisted.
Exactly. They're twisted in their viewpoints. Looking through the book here, what I like about it is, as much as you've got Superman in the sun and you've got Wonder Woman, who's this from a paradise island, and it seems like they're both these godlike characters of sunlight and you know, this power that wouldn't operate at night the way a Batman would, it transitions really well to Batman scenes where you don't feel like he's ever out of place. Where when he does show up in the book, it's very well transitioned to including all three of them appropriately where they need to fit in without anybody's character being put out of place. So it's not like in order for Superman and Wonder Woman to interact with Batman, it just has to be at nighttime. Like, there's some times in this book where Batman says, you know what, we gotta go and fight in the daytime. Mm-hmm. And it never feels out of place. And there's a lot of these scenes here where Batman is apprehending one of these members of the Purge. And you feel like you're suddenly reading a Batman comic.
Right.
And when it gets... And in that very sequence of scenes where he is questioning the member of the Purge by hanging them off of the ledge of a building, Wonder Woman comes through and is like, I don't like the way this guy operates. You're like some cruel beast, like, which is, you're a monster.
Which is very interesting because she's a warrior. She's been in battle and she kills. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting how, you know, she still felt that certain things can be done in a merciful way.
Because she's got there's a certain wisdom.
Right.
Right? Like a wisdom but of Batman, the ancients.
Batman totally disagrees.
Yeah, Batman's like, I don't got time for that kind of stuff. There's a problem here and I've got to solve it. Yeah. And there's no time. He actually says, he goes, I don't have time for mercy. And I didn't ask for your approval.
Mm-hmm.
And they almost come to blows. The first time Batman and Wonder Woman interact with each other, she puts the lasso around the guy and says, you know what? Just tell us what we need to know. And Batman loses patience.
And at the end of it, he uses his own methods and punches the guy out. But when they're questioning this perp that he's been able to, I guess, capture in his trying to figure things out and piece things together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's where Wonder Woman's like, you're a brute. Like, you broke this guy's jaw when we were going to get whatever information we had. We had him capped him already. And Batman very strong about his ways. Like, don't. Go ahead.
Yeah, but then in that moment, that's when Superman comes to Batman's defense. And, you know, even though Wonder Woman questions their association, Wonder Woman actually feels that she can get this job done with the personality and characteristic of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But Superman lets her know that, you know what? We can't get far without him. And he's an asset to us. So just, I understand. Right. I get it. I used to think like you, but you need to give him space.
Right. He knows what he's doing.
And he immediately comes to his defense.
Right. No, it's a great series of scenes where you see them for the first time meeting each other. And Superman's the one in between them saying, like, back off.
Yeah.
She knows what she's doing. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Respect each other.
And they're figuring each other out.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's... And again, that's what is missing in a lot of these movies that they're putting out. Is not allowing the characters to properly develop and interact in a way that establishes a respect. And for when you do go into battle, when you do go into the struggle with someone... It means more.
And can I just say, Wonder Woman's invisible plane made an appearance.
Oh, no kidding. And you know what was a great touch to that? Is when, as they're teaming up a little bit more and more, Bruce sees the invisible plane, and he think and in his internal dialogue, he's like, I need one. Like, those are the touches that you've got to explore, because... That's what Batman would say. He's like, where did she get that?
Yeah.
I need to have, like...
Yeah. And, you know, even though at this point in the story, he didn't know much of her, he's at least heard of her.
Yes.
He said, oh, you're the supposedly Wonder Woman. So it kind of touches back on who the type of person that he is. He's a detective. He's an investigator. He's someone who's educated, who has calculated, who makes calculated steps. And he doesn't go into things blindly.
He has a little bit of a background. Even if he doesn't know all the facts, he's like, I know something.
Yeah.
I know a little bit about you. I've heard of you. I don't know all the details.
Yeah.
But I, so,
to and me, that's the Batman we know and love.
Right.
And that's the one that you respect. And you're like, you know what? If he knows this much, how much is he going to get by the end of the story? And so it keeps you intrigued, and it keeps you... You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. That's a perfect way to describe it. It intrigues you to him to be like, okay, he's never completely brainless.
No.
Right? He's never completely out of it. He's like, oh, someone got a complete fast one on me and I have no idea who that could be.
Right.
He knows. He knows what's going on. Yeah. And the only time I think where he's been completely blindsided, well, I can't say that in like a... Make that a
broad complete statement.
Yeah, it's a broad statement. The one time, though, in the comics where I've seen him be naive and ignorant is in the Court of Owls, where he's almost convinced himself they don't exist.
Right.
But almost
because... But at first, though, in I know we're shifting gears a little bit, but at first, as a young child, he thought it was real.
Right.
And he was onto something. He was investigating since he was a kid.
And that's the point, is that it's almost like he has a suspicion, but it's almost like, I kind of want to ignore this. I don't want this to be true. Because when I was a kid, I was wrong.
Right. It was a fable. It was a nighttime story that his dad would tell him. It's not real. And that he was trying to hold on to that, I guess, fantasy.
Yeah.
And being like, no, there's no way that this can be a realistic scenario. So
yeah. That's the only time where I can think of him being kind of blindsided by something.
Batman Court of Owls, that's another pickup. Guys, whoever's listening, that's the one. Court that of messes Owls. With your head.
That's a great story, yeah. What else you got for me? You got a plethora of notes. I like this. Keep them coming.
Well, we know at this point in the story, though, that Wonder Woman gets a little impatient and she locates Bizarro and she goes after him on his own, on her own. Mm-hmm. Big mistake. Mm-hmm. And Bizarro obviously takes her down. There's a brutal beating. She's tortured, captured.
Almost, there's a scene where Ra's al Ghul actually, he doesn't outrightly say it, but references the fact that he's going to abuse her in a inappropriate way.
Yeah.
As like, almost, you're going to be my sex slave.
It was almost a little bit, it was a very sensitive topic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those things where it's not outrightly said, but you know what they're referring to, and it goes to show you, like, okay, this guy he's not a good dude.
No.
Yeah. As much as his idea may be noble to cleanse the earth and make it a paradise in his own version, he's a monster. Yeah. Exactly.
But I also appreciated when, at this point, that's when Artemis and Batman meet.
Okay.
And they have a little bit of a... I think this is the second time they come together.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like, as much as Batman can hold his own, I like that in this story, he's humble enough to realize when someone has skill.
Yes.
And he's never going to tell you to your face.
No. But that's what makes him a great warrior here, is that he knows where, like, okay, I'm out of my league.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, this chick got a couple of shots in.
Oh, yeah.
Artemis got a couple of shots in. And he was like, you know, where did she get this training from? She's young. She, you know, how is it that she's able to do this type of stuff? And he respects it. And I like that about him. Even though he obviously knows it's his enemy, he's able to still kind of put his pride aside a little bit and be like, damn, they know what they're doing.
And that's what makes him successful, is that people forget. The only reason why Batman can win is because he knows how easy he can lose. He loses along the way.
Mm-hmm.
He suffers losses to be like, I gotta backtrack because I'm going to get killed here. I got to run. And some people are like, no, he's Batman. He just wins everything. No. Batman sees what he's up against.
He knows his limitations.
Yeah. And then he's like, okay, I got a plan for this, this, and this. Because if I don't, I'm dead. And that's what makes a Batman interesting.
Yeah.
Which I will say was somewhat more explored in BVS. I'll give
it credit for that. It was, because he went with his geared up suit. He didn't just go with his little, mask
and, that was,
and cape.
Those aspects of Batman were explored well. Only thing I have a problem is Superman fell for the same trick twice with the with the kryptonite dust. And it's like, Superman's not that stupid. But anyways, Wonder Woman here gets brutally injured in the middle of this story, where she has to get into the Lazarus Pit, which was, I thought,
crazy.
A very interesting thing, because historically the Lazarus Pit makes you come out
crazy.
A little bit insane.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of sanity, and I like this panel here of Superman and Batman looking her rise from the Lazarus Pit, healed from her deadly wound, and they're both like,
oh no. Crap. Yeah. And that's the thing that Batman says, I've never witnessed the actual process, only the aftermath. And he knows what that aftermath is and what it involves, and it's complete.
Yeah, and she comes out of it.
She looks crazy.
She's like, what's happened to me? Like, it's a great scene of her feeling, you know, at her wit's end. And she retreats, goes to Paradise Island.
Goes to Themyscira.
And I love when Superman and Batman go to Themyscira, because there's a great panel of Superman flying Batman there, and he hates when Superman holds him while he's flying.
He hates being manhandled by Superman.
Yeah, he's like, I hate when you carry
me. You can see it on his face, too. Yeah. It's a great depiction of, again, but you know what? I thought it's a beautiful depiction, too, because Batman, for Superman to be holding him, you know that Batman then trusts him.
He does.
You know what I mean? But he's so pissed that he does trust him.
And Superman and Clark even says, like, Bruce never likes to fly with me. He insisted on wearing the harness just in case. And he has a release latch on it where he can now, once they get close enough to Themyscira, he's on like a, I can't remember what the name of this, like a glider.
Yeah.
He's on a glider and he's able to fly himself. Now, Superman can catch him if he wanted to, but it's like, I don't need you. Let me be.
Yeah.
And he finds, once he lands and he's traveling through the jungles of the Amazon, he finds Diana bathing in some purified water to cleanse her of the effects of the Lazarus pit.
Mm-hmm.
And he is absolutely like
mesmerized.
Perfect.
By
perfect
her word. Beauty, by her, what did he say? Her
grace.
Her grace, her divine, splendor.
Yeah.
And he gets like lost.
He gets love struck.
And then all of a sudden he just lays one on her.
Yeah.
He just goes for it. And I'm just like, whoa.
So let me ask you. New 52 Superman and Wonder Woman were a couple. And I kind of liked it. I was at first like, nah. But I've always said, you know what? They should be a couple. They're like perfect for each other. It's a perfect pairing. She's in a class of her own. He's in a class of his own. It scares everybody for them to be together. But like, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But do you prefer Batman and Diana possibly being in a relationship? Because that has been very closely explored. It was explored in the animated Justice League series and in some of the comics. They were on the verge of possibly being a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, you see them smooch for a second. Embrace. She's like, get the hell off of me. She wasn't having it.
No.
But what do you think of that possibility of them being...
I don't like it.
Why not?
I like them being friends. And as sad as I am that Batman is who he is today because of what he experienced, I feel that he's driven to do what he does because he's alone. And I feel like if a girl gets in there, that's it.
Not even if it's Wonder Woman, who knows him and understands his mission and would support him with that?
I kind of like
that. I'd like to see that explored.
I like the cold side of him. I like the fact that he's, you know what? This is my one-man mission, my one-man war. And he's driven by that.
He likes
and
not, being a loner.
Yeah, and not being held back by emotion. And feeling.
I'd like to see that, though.
Although he does what he does because he's so driven, because he's so emotional, because he's so, you know, because he suffered the most horrific, you know, thing, that's what drives him. But I also think that if someone were to get in the middle of that, they would kind of interfere.
I'd like to see him have that sort of aspect added to him, because he's been alone for so long and it's been avoided for so long. I'd like it's an avenue that everyone's waiting to see explored, and some people are saying even
and you know what, long story short, if he's gonna be with anyone, it needs to be with Selena.
Okay, I agree.
Yeah
you got it.
It needs to be with Selena,
but she's a villain.
She's not a villain, she's an anti-hero.
Okay yeah. I like that
yeah.
Good pull. Fine. What else you got? Doc J, we are running out of tape.
What do you mean? We can keep going. It's okay. I think at this point in the story, that's when they come to... They locate Ra's al Ghul's... They locate Ra's al Ghul, and that's when you actually see them pull together and put a plan of action together, and you see them become a team. Because in this, the first part of the show or the story, it's them kind of figuring each other out. It's Superman coming to the defense of Batman. It's Batman not liking Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman's methods, Wonder Woman questioning the type of man that he is, that he's no better than the criminals he puts away. Mm. But now they're kind of, you know, understanding each other and fitting together.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like that. Like, you know, they got through that rough patch,
mm-hmm.
as Alex Karev would say.
oh boy.
But now they're showing their true colors to each other, and they're putting trust into each other. I think that this is the part of the story where I feel like, yeah, something's gonna happen.
Okay. There's a really cool cameo here.
Very cool cameo.
Tell us about it.
Aquaman!
Aquaman? Aquaman shows up? How does he make a cameo? Does Batman send a email to Wonder Woman to say, open this up and look at what people have found underwater? How's that introduced, Staff J?
I think it's amazing, and it's done in such an elegant way, and I know it's probably kind of just like, oh, it's too, like, you know, I'm elaborating, but, so, Batman is on this mission, because now that they know where Ra's al Ghul is, he knows where to go. So he gets into his Bat submarine, and he's on his way. And at this point, the submarine is being attacked by dolphins, and...
And
he's like, what?
He's in foreign waters.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's a great tease. I think it's a great tease, because it's just enough, because at that point where all the dolphins are attacking, all of a sudden they disperse. And then that's when Batman notices that there's this man.
And he gets frightened.
Yeah.
he
gets a little taste of his own medicine.
Yeah.
And he realizes that there's this man who is in these deep waters, who physically should not be able to survive this environment.
Right.
Is there. And he just looks at him and just sees him. And then all of a sudden disappears. So it's just the right amount of... you want to cheer, you're excited, and then a sigh of relief that they didn't fight each other. You know what I mean? Because at that moment
well,
you're
that
thinking,
would be a good way to have, like, an Easter egg or a cameo appearance, maybe in, like, a movie or something. But I digress. Continue.
I thought it was a great introduction to, you know, that part of the world, the water world.
Yeah,
to be explored and introduced.
Yeah, it fit well. Good fit.
One of the things that really got to me earlier in the story was when Batman came to Wonder Woman's rescue, just before she threw herself into the pit. Batman took down Bizarro.
Giving him a flash bomb to the eyes.
Yes, and. It was so painful. And so
you got a weak spot for Bizarro.
I do in this story, I really do. I felt that he was just I thought he was victimized and taken advantage of. And you know, of course, because of his I don't have the word right now, but Batman basically took this high voltage something or the other and hit him right in between the eyes and crystallized. Yeah, and crystallized and made his eyes become like these hard stones or gems. And Bizarro's like, Bizarro, don't see. Bizarro, don't know. And I'm like, oh no, you poor thing. It's just a terrible, terrible. And I know that's what Batman had to do in order to be able to save his colleague and stuff, but
it was desperation.
It was, and you know, Bizarro is still fighting the pain, and he's crying about what he's going through. And I felt like I actually had a hard time reading it.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know you were such a
Bizarro fan.
Yeah, like you have a soft spot for the Bizarro.
That's
cool.
I think mostly though, because again, Ra's had portrayed himself to be an ally or a friend to Bizarro.
Making him feel useful.
Yeah, and he really wasn't. He was just abused and manipulated.
Yeah.
And at this point in the story, he was still victimized by what was done to him by my favorite superhero.
I like that. I like that puts you... See, I think that's good writing. When you can be rooting for your hero, but then also feeling for the villain who you feel is being victimized. It puts you at an odds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was definitely inner conflict.
Yeah, it's good.
Because
I'm like,
I want Ra's al Ghul to not succeed, but I don't want Bizarro to get hurt.
Yeah,
Right. And I felt like it wasn't just a physical pain that he was going through, but it was also emotional.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. What else you got for me? Continue with your points. This is good.
What else do I have to you? Huh. Well, Bizarro obviously starts getting some of his sight back. And again, Batman starts attacking him. And he kind of, I guess, neutralizes him by using this titanium mesh net. He loads it with this mega voltage, and because at this point they're in the middle of the ocean and the salt water kind of super amps the charge, and he kind of hits them in the eyes again. Again, I feel bad for the guy. But Batman shows up with this super...
Armored suit.
It kind of, again, like, it's almost like BVS just won't go away. But, like, it introduces this... Introduces it nicely, and there's just this easy flow within the story of character development and what you need to do to prepare for certain battles. Yeah. And I thought it was done really well in the story.
You know what was cool, speaking on building off what you just said, it reminded me of the fact that at different intervals within this story, each character takes on the other person's villain.
Yes, I was just about to say that. So, you know, Batman takes on Bizarro, Ra's goes against Diana, and Superman goes after Artemis.
It's really well done that they mix and mingle the all of these characters together and make them all... It's not just like, okay, you go after the girl because that's your bad guy.
Right.
And you go after that guy because... you know him, and I'll go after the guy who looks like me.
Right.
It was really well, that's...
Because it's still, I think it allowed for sometimes an open-ended... I'm kind of a little tipsy on the...
Too much champagne.
On the bubbly. But so, forgive the whatever.
I think you're actually very smooth this episode.
Thanks.
You're in top form.
It kind of, the open-ended conclusion kind of allows for imagination to happen or another story to be told.
Right.
Because at the end of it, Artemis gets away.
Right.
And Diana doesn't really know if it, because she did, in fact, there was evidence earlier in the story where there was a certain knot that was done that only the Amazonians do. So she was questioning, like, oh my goodness, do we have a traitor among us? And when Batman questioned her about it, she got offended.
Oh, so you're trying to say that portions of the plot and explaining why people are there are explained to you as opposed to you just having to explain it yourself and defend it. Is that what you're trying to say to me?
That is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, okay. I got it. Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
But yeah, I thought that was very interesting. There would have been nothing wrong if Bizarro would have went against Superman and Batman against Ra's and then Wonder Woman. Exactly. There would have been nothing wrong with it, but it would have been very easy.
And it makes each character appreciate what the other person has to deal with.
It's going through. Right? Yeah, exactly. Really well done. Yeah, so I thought it was a great story. I love the interaction with all the superheroes. It wasn't your typical, hey, you're on my side, let's do this together.
And it was like, no, like,
I'm questioning you. There's something about you that I don't like. I don't like your methods, and I'm going to knock you in the face a couple of times until I'm happy. Like,
but there also wasn't, what was also absent from it was that it wasn't like these characters are like, if there's a 1% chance that this person can do damage, I got to kill him as an absolute certainty. Nobody was out to kill each other. They said, you know what, you got a different way of doing things.
They problem solved.
Right. They communicated.
Yeah.
And
they
said, okay, you know what, this is how I function, that's how you function, but we're after the same goal.
Yeah.
So let's work together as a team. And as the story progressed, they developed an admiration for each other and an appreciation for what they bring to the table and what each character represents.
Speaking of appreciation for each other, it was interesting. In the story, Superman's thoughts were said of Diana, she had a sense of sacrifice. In regards to Batman, it was unshakable reasoning. With Wonder Woman, what she thought about Batman and Superman, she was comforted that she can count on these two comrades, that they will do anything to keep what she holds dear safe.
Oh, very nice.
Batman's, his interpretation of both of them, it was never explained. It was more like, it was almost as though it was just kind of, he knows that they're there, and when he needs them,
they'll serve his purpose.
They'll be there.
So at the end of it, he wasn't like, I've got to go and form a Justice League now. That's not what he was still being Batman. He said, I got Dick Grayson at home. I've got stuff to do back in my city. That's what Batman did, right? He wasn't like,
oh boy.
Yeah, I'm not going to let it go. It's just, you know what it is? Before we end this, this is just
good storytelling. That's what it is.
Right.
It's good storytelling.
And when you see a story told in such a organized manner of, wow, there's so much possible, like, how, and this was a 3-issue story, everybody. It's about 200 pages as a graphic novel, but it wasn't like a 12-issue series where all of these things happen. This was done in a nicely tight-woven story where these characters are introduced for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
They have to find a reason to work together, and at the end of it, they have admiration and respect for each other, and nobody died unnecessarily just to shoehorn story lines in.
Yeah.
And it made you, and other members of Justice League were cameoed. It's almost like, well, here's a movie that could have been made with everybody that you put on that poster. And you know what? There were times when some of them did fight each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, look at what you got. So I think that's why people who, like myself, who have such feelings towards the movie, get disappointed, because here's a perfect portrayal of each of these characters that introduce Diana and explore her other than just going after a photograph. She's actually useful, and you go to Paradise Island. Like, it's just a beautiful
portrayal
and expansion of all of this world that they exist in.
Yeah.
What did you think of this artwork? I know I touched on it a little bit at the beginning, but what did you think of it?
Again, like everything else, unless it's Jim Lee, I'm always questionable. And I'm like, why does Superman have such a big chin? And why, but like always, and maybe it's getting old, but I find that the art always complements the story.
Yeah.
And it is, especially because this is supposedly their first encounter. The fact that the lines aren't as crisp and everything is kind of like antique.
Mm.
I thought that it kind of brought, it's like, oh, there's a history here. So it made the story kind of hold a little bit of weight.
Now, this isn't a perfect story. I'm not going to tell people like this is the absolute perfect story of all time. But it is, for me, the way I would describe the artwork, it's very traditional but timeless. It's got a very good style. It's stylized very well, but it's done in a way that doesn't put these characters at any era.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. This could be taking place in the 1950s. This could be taking place in the 2000s. It doesn't age it. Because it is such a classic-looking rendering of them, and it has harkenings back to a little bit of the animated series and a little bit of almost, not quite, but almost of that Alex Ross kind of style of a classic looking character.
Right.
It's not painted as a actual person, but it's done in a way where this could be any era, and it's a timeless story that can fit into any continuity of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about the way Matt Wagner wrote it and drew it. And I wish things like this, I wish they make an animated movie of this. I wish this is adapted in some way, because it's, unfortunately, it's not going to be done in a live action film.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's too, it makes you feel too good at the end of it. But it could be a really great animated feature. And I encourage anybody who's looking for a fun, true to character,
a fine written story.
Yes.
Yeah.
True to character of Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman, the DC Trinity. This is a really great place to start, and you're not going to be, weighed down by years and years of, oh, I had to have known this that happened to them, or I have to know that this is going to happen to them. There's no weighty continuity issues with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really good standalone miniseries. So that is our review and commentary on Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Trinity, written by Matt Wagner. Daff J, you were in tip-top form. Your notes were awesome, and you brought a lot to this episode. Thank you so much.
Great. I'm glad.
If you guys want to reach out to us, hit us up at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Visit our website at caveofsolitude.com. And I got to say that we've received a couple of reviews on our iTunes page.
Como se va?
You know what? I should pull them up and I should read them.
Okay, do it.
Okay, just give me 1 second as I pull this up. Okay, so the first review that we received was about a year and a half ago from our co-host of the show, Our Wild Card. So this is what happens. When you write a review of the show, there's a good chance I'm going to track you down and put you on the show. So Our Wild Card sent us a really nice review when the show started, and we appreciate that. But recently, we got two new reviews. One from Adam0824, who said, "I started listening to the podcast recently, and I must say I'm pretty entertained. As a pop culture junkie, I enjoyed the variety of topics discussed here. Good hosting team, entertaining guests, and interesting opinions. Give it a listen. I'm sure you'll like it." And from London to Monte Carlo by train, he said, "The Cave. These podcasters give their honest opinions on a variety of subjects. Some I've never heard about, some I've known too long. Feels like overhearing a conversation sometimes. Excuse me while I get more data for my phone because I have to download all of their content.
What?
Keep up the good work, nerds." So thank you guys very much for your kind words, your nice reviews. Hoping to get this show a little bit more exposure because we have a fun time doing it. We're not by any means experts, but we are enthusiasts.
We are enthusiasts.
That's what I will say.
Shout out to Little Sparrow and her nest.
And check out the Trinity book, Little Sparrow, because I think you'll like it. I know you had a hard time reading Hush and Under the Hood because it was so intense, but this is a lot more, I think, your speed.
And you know what? Shout out to Seven at BMV.
Yes, I always have a good time going to BMV. And if you're looking for a good place to start collecting back issues and graphic novels for a good, decent price, go see Seven at BMV at Bloor and Spadina. That's the location, right? Getting confused. Bloor and Spadina, top floor.
We don't even get paid for this.
No, we're not getting paid for
but
this.
But he's just a likable guy.
He is, and he treats me well, and he always says nice things about the show. And for those of you in the GTA who are looking for a LCS, a local comic shop to go to on the regular to get your weekly books,
Cyber City Comics!
Best comic shop in the city, guys. Thank you for listening, and we will be back soon.
Have fun, ciao!